You know that feeling, right? When something you've always sort of felt deep down suddenly just clicks. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, like a code you didn't know you were hearing is suddenly deciphered.
Exactly. That's the kind of deep understanding we're chasing today. We're diving into something ancient, really mind-bending, the Ouroboros.
Ah, the Ouroboros.
Specifically, how it connects to, well, our own consciousness.
That image, the snake eating its own tail. It's timeless, isn't it? Pops up everywhere. Across cultures, millennia.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Jung, for instance, he saw it as fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
An archetype.
Yeah.
You know, a symbol of wholeness, even infinity.
Wholeness and infinity.
Right.
And that powerful image, that's going to be our guide for this deep dive.
What a lens, yeah.
We're using it to explore something really personal. Your own inner world. Your self-awareness. Those aha moments you get.
Uh-huh.
We're thinking this ancient symbol might actually unlock something about how those happen. So our mission really is to unpack this idea, consciousness turning inward on itself.
Right. Using the Ouroboros as this guiding metaphor to see what happens when awareness kind of folds back.
Folds back on itself, yeah.
And we'll be holding from all sorts of places, philosophy, mystical traditions, just trying to get to the heart of it.
Okay, so let's jump right in. This Ouroboic feedback loop.
The core idea.
It's like, imagine consciousness not just, you know, looking out at the world, but suddenly becoming aware that it is the one looking.
Hmm.
One source we looked at describes it as consciousness mirroring itself through its own perception, like the universe realizing it has eyes, sort of.
And it's fascinating how different people have reacted to that inward gaze. You take someone like Nietzsche.
Oh, yeah.
He famously warned, didn't he? Gaze long into an abyss, the abyss also gazes into you.
Right. Such a chilling line.
He saw a real danger there. And looking too deep inside, this fear of maybe becoming the darkness you find.
Becoming the monster. But then you get this completely different take, don't you? Especially from meditative traditions.
Totally different.
Where those monsters Nietzsche worried about aren't external things you become, but, well, the ego itself. Facing its own shadows.
Exactly. It's more about seeing it, recognizing it, integrating it, not turning into it.
The mirror analogy helps here, I think.
It really does. So one mirror.
Yeah.
That's just normal consciousness, right? Reflecting the outside world, everything out there.
Standard mode.
Then you put two mirrors facing each other. That first flicker of reflection back and forth, that's like the dawn of self-awareness.
That's the fall from innocent grace, the source mentioned, meeting the ego monster.
Kind of, yeah. That initial, maybe jarring self-recognition. But then infinite mirrors.
Reflecting endlessly.
Right. And then that infinite regression, that space... Mm-hmm. That's where the solid sense of me, the ego, and even those monsters can start to just dissolve,
yeah,
fade out.
Into that glorious void description. It's like the initial shock wears off, leading somewhere else entirely.
Meister Eckhart, the mystic, he touches on this. He talks about when the spirit turns from all things becoming into the not becoming.
Turning away from the constant doing and getting.
Then the void shines into void. It's this deliberate shift inward into stillness, this space of... pure potential.
And that Eckhart quote is incredible. What the eye through which I see God is the same eye through which God sees me.
So powerful, isn't it?
It's this intimate reflexivity. The observer and observed are one. It feels like the polar opposite of Nietzsche's abyss warning.
Absolutely. So this helps us define this Ouroboros state of consciousness, doesn't it? It's this advanced, heightened, self-referential perception.
Consciousness aware of being aware of its own awareness.
Exactly. A loop of knowing, folding back, amplifying itself. And the really profound bit is the suggestion that right there, in that self-reflection, consciousness can potentially touch infinity.
Now, this snake eating itself, it's not just European, is it? Our sources mention Quetzalcoatl.
Right, the Aztec deity.
Yeah.
Spiraling, self-devouring snake god. Totally different cultural context, but the theme resonates.
It's amazing how it appears in such different places.
Exactly. The Aztec version is obviously woven into their whole cosmology, but the basic idea, the cyclical self-contained being, it echoes the Ouroboros we see elsewhere.
Because it's older than the Aztecs, right? Our sources say it's much more ancient, more universal.
Oh, definitely. Which, naturally, brings us to ancient India and Kundalini.
Ah, the serpent power.
Here, the Ouroboros idea really comes alive as the Kundalini serpent, mm-hmm. often shown coiled, dormant at the base of the spine.
Representing this untapped life force within us.
Right. And the yogic practices, the intense focus, the introspection, it's all aimed at awakening this serpent. The heat generated by the practice is said to stir it.
So it wakes up and connects back to the Ouroboros how?
Well, the awakened kundalini is often described as consuming itself in a way. It kicks off this powerful, self-sustaining internal cycle, a transformation.
Moving beyond just linear time and experience.
Into this infinite paradoxical loop. Renewal. It's quite profound.
And that image of the yogi meditating in flames
symbolizes that intense energy, yeah. The fuel for the transformation,
yeah.
The serpent uncoiling is like this primal bioenergy system just rebooting.
It reminds me of that T.S. Eliot quote about exploration.
Oh, the one about arriving where we started.
Yes. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time.
It fits perfectly, doesn't it? It shows the Ouroboros isn't just going round and round in the same circle.
It's a return, but with new eyes, deeper understanding.
Regeneration, yes, but also self-reflection. Endings and beginnings tied together,
yeah.
Coming full circle, but changed.
With a new awareness level.
And there are slight differences in how East and West view this cycle, aren't there?
Seems so. The East often sees it more as a wheel, right?
Yeah, like the Buddhist wheel of Dharma or the Indian Yugas and
yeah.
These vast cosmic cycles. Even the Persian phoenix just rising again exactly as before.
And Egypt's afterlife, like a continuation.
But in the West, it seems to have taken on more of a spiral shape. There's this sense of movement, ascending or descending. Dynamism.
Sufism might have influenced that.
Our source suggests that, yeah. And Jung's idea fits the spiral too.
How so?
His idea that we meet our inner challenges out in the world as destiny until we face them internally through individuation.
Ah, so each loop of the spiral isn't just repetition.
It's a chance for new insight. Like Eliot said, knowing the place for the first time, you learn.
So the West kind of transformed the cycle into a path towards growth, enlightenment, learning from mistakes, becoming genuinely new.
Which loops us back, interestingly, to Meister Eckhart. He doesn't use the snake image directly.
No, but the parallels with Eastern ideas are there, that search for unity.
And he gives us this idea of spiritual autophagy.
Autophagy, like self-eating.
Metaphorically, yes. The soul consuming itself in its search for God. It's another take on that self-referential loop in consciousness.
Fixed with his quote, "What food has he prepared for this feast? Himself, no less than himself."
Exactly. It's like the Ouroboros, but mental autophagy. Consciousness feeding on itself.
So in meditation, it's not passive. Consciousness is actively, what? Consuming its own perceptions.
Feeding upon its own sensory or perceptual signals, as the source puts it. Just like Eckhart's soul finding sustenance within, our awareness loops back, intensifies itself, finds insight in itself.
And Eckhart's quite clear. Those who live the life of the five senses never taste this food.
It's a call to turn inward, isn't it? Away from the constant external noise.
And when consciousness does turn inward like that, away from all things, it enters that self-feeding loop.
And that's where the void shines into void, potentially leading to this, well, exponential or even infinite expansion of awareness.
The camera pointing at its own screen analogy works well there.
It really visualizes it. It redirects the observer inward and boom, instant feedback loop, potentially infinite, just like consciousness turning its gaze fully on itself.
Which sounds a lot like William Blake. If the doors of perception were cleansed,
everything would appear to man as it is.
Yeah.
Infinite.
Yeah.
It's like he's saying that sensory feedback itself is the key to seeing infinity.
And cleansing isn't just wiping clean. It's transforming.
Moving from our maybe dulled, filtered way of seeing back to that vigilant wonder of childhood.
Yeah.
Before the filters got so strong.
So if you bring all these threads together, India, Eckhart, Blake.
They all seem to point to this hidden potential in the brain, don't they? For deep sensory self-reference.
Normally our senses point out, but in meditation or maybe with psychedelics, that shifts inward, activating these feedback loops.
Exactly. The senses might even become aware of themselves, smelling itself, feeling themselves, tasting itself.
Sight gazing back, sounds echoing internally.
It opens up strange possibilities, even synesthesia senses interacting in new self-referential ways.
And neurochemically, the Ouroboros could symbolize brain chemistry too.
Potentially, yeah. Those constant feedback loops of signaling chemicals,
yeah.
Serotonin, dopamine, GABA, maybe DMT.
Generating those feelings from calm to ecstasy.
It's plausible. All those shifts could be linked to activating these internal pathways in a feedback loop.
The source even joked about life being a quest for the brain's cocktail bar.
Huh. Yeah, chasing those internal signaling substances to keep the party of life going. It's one way to look at it, perhaps slightly playfully.
Okay, shifting gears slightly. The Radisomi movement, they talk about inner light and sound.
They do.
Yeah.
But crucially, they see these not as external inputs, but as internally generated experiences. Cultivated inner hallucinations, if you like, that act as self-amplifying spiritual feedback.
Generated from within. And the microphone analogy helps explain auditory feedback.
Yeah, the mic picking up its own amplified sound from the speaker, point it back at itself, and you get that immediate loud howl.
That feedback screech.
Our brains are obviously more complex, and there's a slight delay, a latency in our nervous system, which probably helps prevent constant internal howling.
A built-in buffer.
But the analogy holds for the idea of sound energy feeding back, and the source breaks it down meditatively.
Right, the component.
Microphone placement is like drawing attention inward. Input sensitivity is like heightening your senses, needing self-honesty. And output volume is like your energetic capacity, leading to flow states.
And people might approach this differently, sensitive introverts versus high energy types.
Seems likely, yeah. Mm-hmm. But either way, the sensory info looping back changes everything. It becomes sensory biofeedback. Self-oscillation.
Like the system starts running on its own signal.
Exactly. And sound systems are built to stop feedback. Evolution probably did something similar for us to keep us focused outwards for survival.
But it can still happen intensely. Kundalini awakening.
Right. That latency buffer helps. But intense spiritual feedback can still be overwhelming, maybe even disruptive sometimes in rare cases.
So if meditation is awareness listening to itself, what about awareness seeing itself? Visual feedback.
That's the next step. The camera pointed at its own screen.
And that creates
this immediate accelerating loop. You see these incredible fractal kaleidoscopic patterns emerge.
Just from feeding the signal back.
Yeah. Tiny movements get amplified instantly, creating unpredictable, complex visuals spiraling towards, well, fractal infinity.
It's amazing how complexity arises from such a simple setup. And the link to psychedelic visuals is obvious.
Very strong. And the source offers that simple explanation, Occam's razor. Maybe psychedelics just relax the brain's filters.
Letting normally suppressed, amplified signals flood consciousness, creating their own feedback loop.
That's the idea. A potentially simpler explanation for those intense visuals.
And that visual similarity, the Buddha image from video feedback looking like traditional art.
It's uncanny, isn't it? Makes you wonder about the underlying patterns of perception.
Okay, so beyond light and sound, there's something even more basic, bodily sensation.
Yes, self-referential amplification through just feeling, bodily awareness,
right,
argued as perhaps the most primal form of feedback.
The first channel activated when we turn inward, but often overlooked.
Paradoxically, yes.
Yeah.
We focus on sights or sounds in meditation, maybe, but we are, as the source puts it, these bundles of unconsciously roaring sensations.
That hits home. Close your eyes, turn attention inward. And you immediately feel more, don't you? Tingling, warmth, pressure.
Absolutely. And amplifying those basic feelings is maybe the first real step into that self-referential space.
Because consciousness attending to sensation creates the loop. Sensation feeds back into awareness, which notices more sensation.
Precisely. Where attention goes, prana flows. Observing kicks off the cycle.
Like that story of the Indian master, his enlightenment starting with an itch.
Yeah, an itch on his head that just intensified, expanded, engulfed him, dissolving time and space. And the station master's insight too, skin sensation is the most fundamental yet unconscious base.
And this can extend to other senses from that bodily base. Internal sounds, sights, even taste and smell.
That's the suggestion. Like those Sufi meditations on flower fragrances, it suggests the potential for all senses to loop back.
Which ties back again to psychedelics, those experiences of eternity, divinity.
Could be, the source suggests, down to heightened sensitivity in all five sensory circuits, leading to this explosion of self-referential feedback.
So, meditation or psychedelics? The common ground might be intensified senses leading to these singular feedback loops, causing the extraordinary experiences.
That seems to be the core argument, yes. An intensification leading inevitably to feedback.
Okay, so wrapping this up, the big takeaway seems to be consciousness in this reinforced loop chasing its own tail.
The Ouroboros loop.
Dramatically intensifies wakefulness, leading to Ouroboros consciousness. Consciousness knowing it knows, a uniquely human thing.
That's the suggestion. And yeah, it might stretch conventional science, but it feels intuitively resonant somehow.
Like Einstein thinking about the universe folding back on itself.
It mirrors consciousness folding inward at some evolutionary point, doesn't it?
And that idea of repeated patterns, algorithms from quantum to cosmic scales, hints at deep connections.
Then the source brings in that huge metaphor, the great attractor.
Taking it cosmic.
Using that astronomical concept, this massive thing pulling everything towards it, as a metaphor for consciousness being irresistibly drawn inward by its own self-reflection.
It ties the personal and cosmic together perfectly.
Because it mirrors the whole argument, right? Consciousness turns inward, creates a feedback loop, deepens awareness, transforms by collapsing old patterns.
Like stars into a black hole.
And starts renewal.
And the fractal idea reinforces its same patterns, micro and macro, the smallest snake biting the biggest. Scale becomes meaningless.
Leading to that poetic image. The self as a micro galaxy, with a black hole at the core of my soul.
Symbolizing death and rebirth, a gateway where angels wait.
Entering that intense pull of the Ouroboros, the integrated attractor, means dissolution, like the stars being drawn in. It's the cycle of change, civilizations rising and falling.
The king is dead. Long live the king. That relentless spiral.
That, the source concludes, is the work of the great attractor. Feared for the death it brings, maybe, but also utterly compelling.
Wow. Okay. So a final thought to leave listeners with.
Well, building on that transformation idea, something perhaps beyond imagination, there's that incredible Rumi quote.
Which one?
When I die, I shall soar with angels. And when I die to the angels, what I shall become, you cannot imagine.
That really lands it. So for everyone listening, maybe take some time to reflect on this. Self-awareness, inner feedback loops, the potential for transformation inside you.
This dive into the Ouroboros is really just scratching the surface, isn't it? An invitation to explore your own inner cosmos.
Absolutely. We hope it sparked some wonder, maybe some questions for your own journey of discovery.